see DevSecOps pipelines and all the things. I'm Michael. I work as a senior developer evangelist at GitLab for roughly 3 years now. I go as DNS Michi on the internet, which is DNS MICHI. It's a lovely nickname I got at the University of Vienna back in Austria. And then I figured, hey, in English, this doesn't really work. You can find me on the social medias and also on gitlab.com. If you want to learn more, this is the QR code to the slides. So if you want to take a picture now or just get all the resources, I might be speaking a little too fast, or there might be some resources you want to dive into. Or you might say, hey, Michael is talking way too fast. I just want to read on at my own pace and then learn async. So the slide deck is public, and you can follow along and learn async if you prefer that. Or just hit me up on social media if you have any questions or on our community forums. I want to start with like how are we like thinking of CI/CD, pipeline efficiency, meeting DevSec and ops. And one of the use cases is, and this is most often a business use case, you want to be like faster than your competitors on the market, you want to release faster. There shouldn't be any like blockers to say, hey, this new cool feature should be reaching our customers or should be reaching our users. And like, to be honest, staring at pipelines running and then failing isn't really satisfying. So in the end, like when I started using CI/CD myself many years ago, it was getting started, then it fails, then you do something else, it fails again. Maybe you're drinking some coffee in between because the pipeline is taking for like 10 minutes. Then the team is contributing to the CI/CD pipelines. It's a lot of trial and error. And then everything works, but it's still like a long running pipeline, and the feedback is missing, teams are blocked, the reviews are blocked, and basically nothing works. And on the side, the costs for the infrastructure for CI/CD are also increasing because it's really easy to get some cloud resources and say, well, we need that. And in the end, it's like too pricey and not controllable. So I was thinking of like, well, how can we fix that? And I was in this situation many years ago myself, like dev is becoming ops because someone says, well, fix the pipelines. So why? Yeah, because they're costing us too much money, too many resources. And like how? Yeah, you're the expert now, read the docs, ask the community, do something about it. So at some point I was a developer, also becoming the build server or the CI pipeline maintainer myself. Now, then I got thinking, what are the first steps? So how would I be analyzing whether a pipeline is efficient, or what do I need to understand? This is kind of pointed down to GitLab now, but many of the things I'm showing you today is also applicable to any CI/CD system. In the end, it's important to understand the structure or the architecture. So like for GitLab pipelines, the jobs are grouped in stages. You can build a basic direct pipeline, which is executed in a synchronous way, but there are also possibilities to do it in an asynchronous way, like a DAG, which is called a directed acyclic graph, which kind of is just an asynchronous executed pipeline. And there are more ways to configure that, like consider a multi-project pipeline, parent-child pipelines, parallel metrics builds, which could be involved. And one of the more advanced workflows could also involve merge trains, like in a monorepository with a lot of changes, like estimating what the merge would be, and just ensuring that the merge pipelines are running faster. But there is also like the entire workflow to be looking at. So like creating an issue, starting with a feature branch or a bug fix branch in Git, pushing that, starting with a draft merge request, the CI/CD pipelines kick off. Inside the pipelines, there's also security tests running. Then kind of code review happens. A new Git commit gets pushed. Another CI/CD run is triggered. At some point, the review is okay. It gets approved, gets merged into the master or main branch. Then gets deployed, and then the cycle continues, and we start again. And all of this kind of, maybe there is a blocker somewhere on the way, or we need to kind of think about what could we fix. And oftentimes, it's not just the code is compiling with the XKCD comic, but also the pipeline is running. I used to contribute a lot to open source when the pipeline was running, or answering questions on community forums many years ago. But this isn't like super efficient. So in the end, I thought like, okay, optimizing the CI/CD pipeline needs to be like, I need to understand the configuration. Now, oftentimes we see YAML as the configuration format. Now they need to become like the YAML expert and like compile it in my head, what's wrong. There are certain resources luckily available on like the docs, certain cheat sheets and also linters, getting an idea, this is a syntax error or something. But there's also now a pipeline editor within GitLab, which provides autocomplete suggestions, live linting feedback, so like making a typo is now directly visible and can be corrected before committing and waiting and so on. And it also provides a way to visualize what we're actually building with the jobs, the stages, and so on. And the feature I love the most is like, it can get quite complex over time with like job templates and includes and extends and overriding attributes. There's a way to view the merged YAML within the editor to see, oh, this attribute is actually overwritten, so this might not work, what I'm currently building, rather than like trying to figure out what a pipeline is not working, or the password or the secret is not passed. Now, thinking about how can we like start analyzing when something isn't as efficient as it should be and identify possible problems. And I was looking at the pipeline graph or the pipeline view and saying, well, the pipeline duration on its own is like one of the factors I want to identify. So the critical path in the pipeline, whether it's synchronous or asynchronous, the minimum pipeline duration and the maximum pipeline duration should be like one of the first things I want to be looking at. Then there is the idea or the thing like the number of steps involved. How many stages are there? How many jobs? Are there too many jobs running, or is just one of these who is always consuming 10 minutes for some reason? And we kind of need to be looking into that. Certainly around like other run dependencies which are blocking. So I need to download 10 gigabytes of object, blob, whatever in my CI/CD pipeline. Does that make sense? Can this be optimized? Another thing to be looking at is when there is like a pattern with failed jobs. So sometimes the unit tests are failing, but only on Wednesday between 11 and 12. Maybe they are waiting for lunch or something. No, just kidding. But in the end, there's oftentimes a pattern involved. And this might be influenced either by the code itself or by the infrastructure or something you cannot really control, like DNS or something. The test coverage dropping might also be an indicator of whether there's something going on. And last but not least, the typical thing, a CI/CD job often needs to install dependencies, build tools, test tools. We need to pull containers. And network latency and all the things which are around the CI/CD pipelines could also have like an influence on there's something which we should potentially fix. And like in the first iteration, it's a good idea to have some CI/CD analytics, which can be like built in the tooling, which provides me an idea around, hey, what is the actual duration of the job runs? Is it like half a minute, 30 seconds? Is it 7 minutes? Is it 30 minutes for some reason? And also getting an idea how many of these are like a success and what is the failure. So if there is continuous failure in my CI/CD pipelines, something I should be looking at, because every time a job fails, it's good to know, but it also wastes resources in the background. And this is helpful to identify. There could be like certain anomalies and spikes in there, which should be ignored in the beginning. But oftentimes it really helps to say, hey, this code quality check runs for 7 minutes. Is this really necessary? Maybe this can be optimized in a certain way. The other thing to keep in mind is like there are different visualization layers. So it's not just looking at a YAML configuration file or the pipeline editor. But inside the pipeline views, you can enable a view which shows you the dependencies, which is shown on the right-hand side. So you hover over it and then get to see, hey, this job can only be run when these other jobs have finished the execution in a successful state. the Ethernet corners execution path, which is shown on the left-hand side, is like the directed acyclic graph, also providing a different water flow, gate flow view on the things, which can be helpful like to identify this. And this looks like a huge pipeline. This is taken from the GitLab repository itself, which is, has a lot of CI/CD pipelines on its own. Now, getting into like deep down in the pipeline, what else is going on there? What else do we need to like figure out in order to really get more efficient? Like, what are the workloads? What are the possible bottlenecks? What kind of resources are being used? Is it like the CI job consumes one CPU, or it does need 32? I don't know what the hardware limit currently is. But like, you want to compile something, C++, Rust, C, whatever, versus packaging something with Python or the like. This kind of needs different resources, and maybe there's too much assigned to it. And it's also important to really understand the flow and discuss all the actions within the team. So like refactoring the pipeline can also be seen as just code refactoring in order to reduce the cost, but also figuring out which computing powers you actually need. Like, do I need the machine configuration with 32 cores and petabytes of RAM or something? Or is it just enough scaling it down and then saying, well, it's still fast, but it doesn't consume that much money? Getting a more insight over time into pipelines can be a good idea to configure that in your external monitoring already. So for Prometheus, for example, there's a pipeline exporter which fetches the metrics from the API and then collects the trends and the time series over time. Can configure the alerts, for example, when the pipeline duration is constantly exceeding 7 minutes or whatever term, whatever value is appropriate. This can be a helpful way to get an insight what is going on. I would probably wouldn't recommend setting an alert at 3 a.m. in the morning when the pipeline duration is more than 7 minutes, but you get the idea of like continuously observing what is going on with the CI/CD infrastructure. This goes beyond the CI/CD insights. It's also important to figure out, hey, how much storage is involved? So like, the job artifacts, everything which is generated from inside the CI/CD jobs, should this be kept like forever because we need it, or can we define like an expiration time of, for example, 1 week or 1 day, or maybe we don't even need the artifacts for that long? And considering that, and also like observing or monitoring that, similar to container registry images. So every job using a container to execute in a Python environment or specific other ways, this is lying around on disk to some degree. So we need to figure that out. And when the disk is full and the runner doesn't work, the CI/CD pipelines don't work, development doesn't work, and can basically all go home and wait until the fixes are deployed. Well, we are already at home because we work remotely, but in the end, it's really like there's a problem, and this needs to be tackled in the first steps and not just last when everything is red in the monitoring dashboard. One other thought is network traffic, so CI/CD jobs. Typically, you install certain things all the time to have like the same reproducible builds, apt-get update, apt-get install build essential on Debian or Ubuntu, and then you install Git, and the compiler is already installed. But maybe there's Python dependency and pip install, and probably Node or npm installed is then the worst. So in the end, it could waste a lot of resources, which could also be an indicator to like optimize or cache that in a different way. Similar to like, do I really need an all-in-one container image to build all the CI/CD jobs in the entire company? Or it's like, can I be using smaller container images, which are then like focused on the problem I want to, or the tests I want to run in a CI/CD job. And last but not least, like general infrastructure, like the GitLab runner for CI/CD monitoring the service, monitoring disk I/O, CPU usage, anything which is like typical infrastructure host monitoring in that regard. Or for example, the run is running in Kubernetes, monitoring the nodes and the pods, the containers, the virtual machines, anything which is kind of tied into my CI/CD infrastructure. Can be like using Prometheus, for example, or any other monitoring observability tooling. Another way to look at what is going on in my pipeline and a possible angle to say, well, this could also give me some insight for optimization ideas. Within merge requests, I want to have fast feedback. So I want to have everything which is helpful for the code reviews. And this can grow quite a lot over time. So I want to run the unit tests in CI. Maybe there are certain JUnit test reports integrated and show me what's going on. And there are like flaky tests in there, which could give an insight of, hey, something is broken or going wrong all the time. There might be code quality tests running, accessibility testing, and then all like the security reports, because we want to like shift left security and ensure that we're fixing the problems before we need to fix them at 3 a.m. in the morning yesterday, because we have a security incident which leaks PI or private data. This is something we also want to shift left, but there's a price to pay. This needs to be running and needs to be like also fast. So getting all these insights is important, but also keeping in mind this needs efficiency and not testing everything or every language with a SAS scanner, but focusing, oh, I have a mono repository with the backend in Rust and the front end is Python, and just focusing on optimizing the security scanners, for instance. Thinking of team actions, what can we do as a team to optimize the pipelines? One of the first things is to consider like config efficiency. So like the configuration can get quite complex over time, similar to code. And also like thinking of when we change something in the CI/CD pipeline, we shouldn't be pushing it directly to the main branch and say, yeah, well, it's just a small fix. And then you push another commit, which is the CI build fix. And so on, but instead treat it as a code review and create a merge request, discuss the changes, have it reviewed, and ensure that everything in production actually works. And also documenting and practicing this with your teams. And one of the ideas could be, for example, within GitLab to start with job templates and then extend them. So like don't reinvent the wheel all the time, but instead have a template, which for example installs something, or define some variables and then use that in the existing job definition and just in this example overwrite one build variable. It's a lot to like consider, so don't feel overwhelmed when I'm like jumping in a lot of ideas right now, but this should be like helping to get more efficient. One other idea, and this is like probably I don't know how long it existed, but it also took me a while before I joined GitLab to really understand what the rules and conditions are. It's possible to build sort of dynamic workflows, so only run a job when a certain condition is matching. So I want to release or deploy something only on the main branch. And for example, a staging environment should only be provisioned when there's like a feature branch and I need a specific review app and whatnot. This can be achieved using rules and conditions. And it's also a helpful way, for example, you can use rules to define a variable name on a variable value just by when a certain condition is matched, and then influence the application deployment name or anything which is needed in the environment. So it gets very dynamic, which is helpful, but it's also you need to keep in mind it gets complex over time. So refactoring or fixing a bug later on is also like, it needs a balance between optimizations and hard to debug. The other thought I had was like, do not reinvent the wheel, creating my own CI/CD pipeline collection. So like figuring out which templates I keep using all the time, which for example, prepare the build environment, install certain compiler tool chains, prepare the unit testing, everything which is kind of needed, and have that available in a single location. So it's not like one development team or one team starts with CI/CD, then someone else says, hey, this is cool, I just copy-paste that in my own repository, and then you imagine it's like 100 teams in the entire company, and then there is a bug in one, so like the first team discovers a bug, and the others are like, yeah, but we want to like update this. Yeah, you need to now copy-paste that again. Instead, it would be more efficient to have like a single repository, a single project, which maintains that CI/CD template, and you can include that remotely and say, this is my code CI/CD configuration repository, and then can be like maintained, secured, and included in other repositories. And it's also a way to create compliance requirements or like fulfill them, because you can also configure GitLab in a way that the repository itself cannot define a CI/CD configuration, but you say, hey, this is controlled by a different project which is maintained by a different team, ensuring that the CI/CD jobs are always running the same way. Yeah. One other thought is like, probably we are like developers, engineers, operations folks, but maybe not everyone understands why the pipeline is failing. And like staring at a huge stack trace or a long listing of, hey, this is broken, but I have no idea what the error message is, because I mean, I can read a Python stack trace, but it also takes me quite a while to figure out, oh, the error message is actually like two pages up. And this can take a while. So whenever like running something in CI/CD, it's also a good way to consider when there is a failure and when I create a script or maintain something in that regard, capture that, capture the exception, avoid a stack trace, and make it sure that everyone can contribute to fixing pipelines fast. Maybe use a colored error message, add a troubleshooting documentation URL inside the error message, and say, well, if you encounter this problem, click here. This is like the handbook or the wiki documentation, how to fix the pipeline or fix the error. And also consider documenting the pipeline design. Could be done within the repository itself, just in Markdown or using Mermaid charts, which then can also be helpful to understand the pipeline is failing. Okay, how do I need to fix it? This is also documented. And by the way, this is like the workflow we are kind of intending to follow along. This was a lot of ideas around config efficiency. Changing the point or changing the point of view to resource usage efficiency. Sometimes there are configurations where the entire stage needs to be run. The jobs continue, one fails, but the other jobs are also running until they are okay or failing. But in the end, only the entire stage results matters to continue. And this kind of wastes resources over time. So one of the ideas is to identify or to create a fail fast pattern. So when one job is expected to be failing, for example, compiling software, and there is like a compile error, it doesn't make sense to run the tests or the package creation or the deployment even. This should be like a fast failure. And this could also be like build tools which are installed every time. There might be no incremental builds or caching in that process. So anything which consumes more resources than needed should be identified and potentially optimized. And I'm not sure if you can read that with the beamer now, but the idea really is on the right-hand side, we have like the test stage, and there are three jobs inside, and one of them failed. But I need to wait until everything has run through. And the idea would be really to say, well, maybe I want to just create my own stage, which does the build job. It might be failing, and the test jobs are never executed. So I get to see immediately where the error is going. I don't need to wait that long. And I'm also saving some resources for the test jobs. The other way I could build that is, I don't want to create a new stage because this feels like a workaround kind of thing. I could also use needs to define an asynchronous workflow, thinking of like the other jobs in the same stage are only kicked off when this specific job, or it can also be a list of jobs, are okay. And when it's not, they are never triggered. This is, I don't know exactly when needs was added to GitLab, but this is like one of the ways to do it in a more asynchronous fashion. If I consider, for example, well, I want to run more things in parallel because I have similar tests I want to run, for example, for Python 3.8, 3.9, 3.10, 3.11, I think is the current version. And I want to ensure that, for example, the language features I'm using in the implementation work on both the most modern Linux systems, but for example, on Red Hat, what is the current Red Hat version, 9? I need to support something on Red Hat 7 for some reasons, and the language feature is not there yet. And this is something the job could tell me and can be optimized with metrics builds being executed in parallel. I think I have too many ideas optimizing things. Within a CI/CD infrastructure on its own, because I talked about the resources which I like can control from the GitLab server itself. Since we are often using containers, using like a sandbox environment, it has become super easy to just define the container image, then in the background it pulls it from Docker Hub or wherever it's located. Docker Hub added rate limits in November 2020 or 21, I think, something like that. So at some point it might not work. And the kind of the solution or the workaround was using a cloud container registry or using the GitLab container registry and maintaining own images for the container to being able to have it in the same network environment, just a hop away. The container pool is ready instead of like somewhere on the internet in some cloud, which might not be available at this point. And the other thing to consider is when the CI/CD jobs are installing the dependencies all the time, where sometimes it can be a good idea to say, I'm always compiling with the GCC version 11, whatever, and I need to create reproducible binaries and builds. I want to create my own container image, which has all the build tools installed already, which then allows me to reduce the time which or the resources which are required to be pulled from the internet. And last but not least, like caching is also a thing which comes to mind. One problem with build images is also always using the latest tag. So latest last week was like March the 8th. Now today we have March the 12th. Still the latest build, but something might have changed. And I've seen it in my previous time as a developer. Sometimes a compiler can introduce a regression. You have no idea why it's failing, and it takes quite a while. And it's also a good idea to really know what we're building on in our infrastructure so that I, as a developer, can focus on fixing the bugs and not hunting something which I currently don't understand and cannot reproduce it locally, for example. When it comes to resource sharing, sometimes projects kind of need different resources. So like compiling a C++ program takes more resources than packaging a PHP library, which could be blocking if it's just like one single runner, one single environment. And the heavy jobs and the compiling jobs are taking 25 minutes, 30 minutes, 1 hour, whatever. But they are blocking the queue, and the lightweight jobs could just be continuing. And one of the ideas is to create sort of groups. And within GitLab, it's possible to create tags where the jobs can be defined or tagged to a specific variable, and then registering a runner group, which is just responsible for executing the heavy jobs, for example. And another runner group could be executing the lightweight jobs. And from like a resource perspective, you're assigning 32 CPUs or something like that. And for the lightweight jobs, it just needs less resources, which can also be an interesting way to optimize this. When there are external dependencies involved in CI/CD, like network connection issues, improving the routing, considering that, some things like the container registry cache or caching container images, or when there's a web application which needs a CDN for JavaScript or CSS caching, just having that in mind, also adding that to the infrastructure to ensure that the pipeline jobs are not running into any timeouts or something like that. Yeah, it's if you're using Kubernetes with CI/CD, there might be a runner, might be a Kubernetes executor with the runner configured. There might also be some GitOps workflows in place already using the agent for Kubernetes. And then it's also the thing of, like, if I want to use Kubernetes, for example, for review apps and deploying staging environments and feature branches and merge requests in there, should I be using a dedicated cluster for that, or would I be using shared resources in a production environment? Where, like, one of the ways of configuring where the Kubernetes executor would be executing a CI/CD job can be so-called pod and node affinity, which then says, well, just run on this node or this pod and don't block the production environment or the other resources, which could also be considered harmful in a way. If they are running too many deployments, there's also ways to configure a so-called, like, resource group, which is similar to a semaphore, to like a mutex lock on the production environment to ensure that there is not too many jobs deploying to the same environment in this regard. Could also be a way of, hey, sometimes the deployment works in CI/CD and sometimes it does not. Maybe there's like concurrent jobs interfering with each other. Yeah. Probably I have too many slides for today. Storage usage on its own helps to keep in mind. So the job artifacts, the container registry usage, and also the package register usage. So for example, for releasing tarballs and so on, this can have an effect. I think the most important part to consider with storage is you don't want to like download dependencies all the time. So you're starting out with like the build job, then the test job, and then some sort of like packaging job for uploading. Whenever there's something I need to download from the internet with like pip install or npm install, I can use so-called caches, which are then passed or then configured at the runner. Can also use like distributed caches and just ensure that I'm not downloading too many things which are already there and could just be reused in the next jobs. The differences between caches and artifacts are like the cache should be like for dependencies, so something I install at runtime, and an artifact is something the job generates, so like a report file or a tarball or something else where follow-up jobs are dependent on this. If you consider like auto-scaling, which can also be helpful to ensure that resources are not being wasted, when I'm working like 9 to 5, I probably will need some more resources so that the CI/CD jobs are fast, and there should be some auto-scaling mechanism in the background and saying, okay, now we are firing up like 10 virtual machines, and in idle time I just need 2 of them or maybe just 1. And on the weekend, we shouldn't be developing and we should be enjoying our spare time. Zero virtual machines, so kind of an auto-scaling mechanism in place so that the costs are being controlled and the resources are also not being wasted. But when I need the resources, just ensuring that there are plenty of them which are there available. This was a lot about like resources. Just a quick look how security plays into that. One of the things is often, well, maybe I want to give public access to a project, and then there's a leak or there's something which wasn't that expected. And one of the situations I had many years ago was like, hey, we have a plain text password for the cloud provider. This is like the root account now. And our external tools or processes have that now. Yeah, everyone can hack that now. So we kind of need to roll it over. We need to consider what else is broken, what else has been using this. And yeah, I don't want to burn out from that, because typically these things don't happen during work hours, but just somewhere on the weekend or when someone is asleep. The other thing is, like, in CI/CD, it's easy to like copy paste the password and then leave it there. But when I grant access for the repository to some external users, contractors, which shouldn't have access to that, it's a similar way I want to prevent that. And like storing secrets in CI/CD always has been a little challenging. So like using CI/CD variables for that can be a way of doing that. Another idea is to consider using time-based tokens instead of a raw text credential, which can be achieved, for example, with HashiCorp Vault within GitLab CI/CD, which then kind of creates this token, does the authentication workflow, and then everything is tested and works. But I will never know what's going on. And one of the future things which will be provide us to add more secrets management in GitLab will also be using OIDC with JWT tokens, so that everything is like prepared in that way, that it's not just using HashiCorp Vault, but any OIDC provider, which then can be having like this odd claim and match that this against specific other policies, so there is no like raw text credentials anywhere, and everyone uses the best ways in there. Security scanning is important, but also needs to be like configured and figured out what is needed, like dependency scanning and SAR scanning and specific other things. Jumping through that into some thoughts around observability, consider like monitoring or adding observability for all the things which are important, like installing a Prometheus node exporter, have access to the runner metrics endpoint. Within Kubernetes, also use observability tools like the Prometheus operator, and also consider like looking into CI/CD analytics, like the jobs, metrics, traces, logs. Maybe there's even like more beyond the data which is available, which can be helpful to get an insight. Define some service level objectives. Like for the application performance, for the infrastructure resources. Just to give you an example, like I mentioned in the beginning, the pipeline duration, like the maximum and the minimum version, the thresholds as a service level objective, the number of failed jobs in a defined time frame. If this kind of exceeds the error budget, this could also be an indicator that something is really wrong or should be fixed. And like the typical metrics around memory, CPU, bandwidth and traffic and so on. If something is like broken in that regard, it might also be a good way to consider thinking around about like quality gates in CI/CD. So defining the service level objective and then also failing the jobs and say, well, in this CI/CD job, we kind of, the runtime exceeded a certain value, or we are wasting too many resources, and then like blocking the deployment or the environment if the SLO has been violated. Last but not least, a little bit more into breaking things in a professional way, adding some chaos engineering in CI/CD and verifying that everything I configured works in that way I expect it to be. And for example, adding some DNS chaos experiments and breaking DNS in CI/CD environments could also be a way to verify, yeah, it's actually behaving like that, or it's just running into a timeout or doing something else, and ensuring that like also the service level objectives are matching. Now, last but not least, the best thing would be like, I don't need to do anything about this and everything works automatically, or it's like auto efficiency. I'm I'm thinking about, like, oh, I proposed a feature to GitLab around, like, have some AI-assisted help, which then identifies patterns with failed pipelines, like from the error message or from specific inside behavior, and then propose fixes for that. I don't know if autofix will ever happen, but it would be like in the best case scenario, I as a developer or as like a DevOps person or ops person, I don't want to like spend too much time into fixing pipeline errors or pipeline efficiency. And the other thought I had, and this is a topic I'm following along more in 2023, is eBPF, so the extended Berkeley packet filter, a new way collecting metrics and insights on the kernel level to even get more insights into what's going on into my CI/CD infrastructure, what other events and types I really want to look into. Because I recently, or a while ago, I had the situation of, hey, the DNS response latency in CI/CD was actually causing the AWS costs to go like this. I was like, I would have never like figured it out by just looking at the CI/CD pipeline analytics and also like the cost monitoring. It really needs more data types, more events that are like considered as observability workflows or methods, and then can help like reduce the costs and to get us more efficient. So finally, hopefully efficiency, like as a short recap, optimize the configuration step by step, consider infrastructure resource analytics, analyze security, think about observability, and I think AIOps is the new hot term. So this is like more a buzzword, I would say. But in the end, it's really like considering or evaluating how machine learning or AI could help us get more efficient. We're thinking the architecture and like optimize and iterate. There is pipeline efficiency documentation in the GitLab docs. And I need to update it with all the things I told you today. This is again the slide. This is me. And yeah, thanks for attention. I do have some GitLab stickers with me. I'm available for any questions because I talked quite a long time. But yeah, just shoot me your questions and ideas. Thanks.
Michael, great. Thanks for a great talk. Any questions from the audience? Okay, I come over and to get your microphone.
When you spoke about the DNS latency, and you spoke that integration is not well introduced in AWS, more or less, how you ended up to realize that it was the DNS latency that raised your cost?
I was actually like having the ability to like collect different data sources or different metric types from the different systems. So like having a way to access like the AWS cost control API and integrate that, could be like a Grafana dashboard or a monitoring dashboard, or any like sort of like a look on different sources. And it's not just like I'm looking at like metrics or single values going up, but this could also be, or this was an idea to see, well, the logs from the CI/CD pipelines and then aggregate it to that, but could also involve like, and this is something which I'm currently like thinking about, tracing in CI/CD so that the stages and the jobs are kind of a trace in the span, and you get to see more insights what is going on. But I would say like this specific problem took me quite a while to figure out, and the best tool didn't exist yet, so it was still like, yeah, I would wish for this like this all-in-one, hey, you have a problem here because on the right-hand side there's something in the middle and you didn't think of this like unknown, you might want to fix that. And I think it's the tools or the platforms are not there yet, but everyone is like building into that direction, and I'm hoping that for us as an end user or a consumer of that, it gets easier to get all these insights with observability, whatever it's meant in the background. But in the end, I really want to make the pipeline more efficient and say, well, DNS latency, interesting. Please fix it automatically. This would be my dream, but in the end, it's probably it's not always DNS. But I like this term. So I was a DNS admin at the University of Vienna in 2009, in 2012. So I've seen a lot of interesting DNS errors myself. Yeah, just repeat the questions, like the correlation of the different data types and data sources. Like one thing is can be within the environment, if you control the DNS server, you might be adding a premises exporter, for example, which then is it bind, is it power DNS, is it whatever is being deployed, or like core DNS in Kubernetes. Observing and monitoring like the DNS latency can be like one metric or one data point. And I think it's not just like tied to like this specific example now, but the more observability data we are collecting, I mean, storage is a different problem. The more data we have, the better questions and answers we might get. And I'm hoping that in the future we might go beyond like metrics, logs, traces. There's like error tracking, real-time user monitoring. There are so many different data types, even like NetFlow data or network traffic data. I want to just use that to see what is actually going on in my environment. And especially with microservices and services, Kubernetes, multi-cloud, everything is automated. And when you're looking at it, you have no idea what's going on. And this is also like my problem sometimes looking at dashboards. I say, okay, what is the problem now? Why is it red? Why is it green? So I'm really hoping that also the toolings and the platforms get better at that.
Well, CI/CD pipelines are huge time saver and quality preserver if they are done right. But my biggest concern with them is the huge complexity they introduce to the overall workflow. So especially if you have not your whole team trained as a real DevOps, what is the answer to deal with, well, unexpected situations in complex setups like you described? What is your advice to address this concern of the complexity?
It's a good question. I would like in the beginning consider like treat it as a learning way and iterating on like finding the best CI/CD configuration, maybe even using some opinionated CI/CD templates already there, which have been like proven by the wider community or by the platform itself. I do know that in GitLab something like AutoDevOps exists, which is an opinionated workflow of deploying things, which is then being used in different environments. But in essence, like when there is a specific like failure scenario or things which gets too complex, try to break down the problem. So like, could it be like the configuration? Maybe let's just focus on this specific job. Copy this job configuration into a new project and try to run it there and isolate the problem. Okay, the job isn't really the problem. It's more like the stage itself. So like getting deeper and trying to focus on where this problem comes across, I think can be helpful. It's time consuming, but it also needs team practice, documentation, insight, and visibility or transparency so that everyone can like work on the configuration. And also treating it as a code review so that it's not just this person fixes the CI now and when they're on holiday, nobody can use that. That's probably the wrong way of doing that. Make it a team job. So everyone contributes a little bit of their time to ensuring that the pipelines are working, that they are efficient, and also when someone new joins the team, that there is sort of onboarding documentation of this is how you get a dev environment provisioned or set up, and this is how CI/CD works. And one of the onboarding tasks is to review that, make a suggestion of how to make it more efficient, or like what would you improve if you're working now on the system. I do agree it can get too complex. One of my last advice would be go out there, ask in the community. So like when you're using GitLab, join, for example, the forums, join the Discord channel, join events like this, and just get in conversation with others. Because in my experience, it's not just you or me or someone else, like, I don't know exactly what to do. But maybe someone else had the same use case and they kind of solved it in a different way. And just from getting to know each other and collaborating, this can also be helpful.
Okay, if we know want to have an infrastructure or a pipeline and know our issue is, okay, this pipeline might have side effects or might be affected by side effects, do we have like a general purpose advice to go how best to monitor this? For example, like you have resources that you usually don't track, like, for example, you are in a small IP subnet and, oh, suddenly you have side effects when you run tests.
It's the question, like, what is the side effect? But, like, considering, like, you're running in a small IP subnet and potentially there's not a lot of IP addresses available, or maybe the traffic is limited because it's a VPN or whatever, I think, like, monitoring this from the outside and, like, having some key metrics or service level objectives which always should be matched. And if not, you kind of see the spike going up when the CI/CD job is running, or the disk I/O is going up because the compilation is like, this should give you a good insight. Without any, like, monitoring of the infrastructure, you probably will never figure this out. If this, like, the pipeline duration or the entire runtime or the slowness, it can be correlated with other events when the side effect is like disk I/O is blocking or something else is going on. I think it's a good way, like, to look at the dashboards and say, well, at this point in time, every time I start the CI/CD job, something is broken or something creates a socket because I'm creating a mock API test, whatever thing. And this has an influence on that. I think having some sort of monitoring which tells me about this effects is helpful. And if I do not have it, I might be like opening up my terminal and running IO start, VM start, anything else, and then trying to trigger the problem and say, well, this could be it. If I don't have access to the infrastructure, it gets a little more complicated. But in the end, considering like having the tools or the commands available, which I could also pass to a support team which maintains the infrastructure, say, run this and give me the output while I trigger this over here, could also be a way of debugging. I know it's a little manual, but in the end, it's always, I think we never have access to all the infrastructure we want to have access to. I hope this answers the question a little bit.
Okay. Michael, thanks a lot for your talk. And the next talk is on model learning ops. So if you want to stay or come back, thank you.